Perfectly in sync.
That was a textbook hello, that was.
It was.
That was. If you look up hello in Wikipedia in years to come, they'll just say a greeting slash
yes.
The perfect hello in Movie Banter episode 19.
Hello's in popular culture. It's exactly. A little WAV file.
Yes, that's right,
here
yes.
is an example of the yes. context hello may
yes,
be used
indeed.
In.
Hello used to be a film of greeting until it was ruined by Paul and John of Movie Banter, to which you now listen. So thanks for tuning in, logging on, pushing buttons, whatever
clicking,
you do.
Clicking things, yeah. Mice and
it's
houses.
Very nice of you. I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And this is Movie Banter, the podcast, what we do once a week.
Bit of movies, bit of banter.
Yes, something like that.
Depending on how our cinematic and banter muscles have been worked
exactly,
this
and
week.
Probably equal amounts this week.
Really? I was going to go more banter than movies.
Well, is it? Well, I've seen a few movies.
I haven't really.
I've got quite a sore throat this week, so you may have to do more talking. So
you've seen the films, yeah. I'll do the talking.
Can you just guess what the plots and reviews are, and I'll just say yes or no.
Okay, that could work. So, you could mime.
Yeah.
And I'll try and translate.
It'll be a podcast via interpretive dance.
Exactly. And no one will be able to see the dance, so you won't feel stupid.
We could play charades on the podcast.
We could do.
It's a film, obviously.
That doesn't work. You can't mime film and say film. That's not charades. That's then just talking.
Well, if I just mime it, they can't see it.
Yeah, but you're meant to mime it, and then I guess it. What? If you're just miming it, it's a film, two words, first word sounds
but
like
they can't join in then, can they?
Do you really think they're going to be joining in?
What, you could do it in reverse. I could say, it's a film, and they have to guess what the mime would be, and they, at home,
no,
do the mime.
Work. Yeah, but then they could do that themselves just by looking up film titles and hazarding a guess. It's in mind.
Never going to be an idea that really
not
flew, really. Flew, was it? Really?
It's not taking off, and yet we've already managed to witter on for far too long about
this
it.
This is the banter section of the show.
This is, but it gets better.
We have movies to talk about this week. I saw a film called Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Mall. That sounds like an Americanism to me.
Paul Blart, the
shopping centre.
In space, policeman. Store detective.
Yes.
So I'll be talking a little bit about some of that and some DVD things.
I unfortunately have only seen a film on TV, which is The Peacemaker.
Oh, The Peacemaker.
Yeah. Which I think I can
is
wish about
George
it.
Clooney?
It is. Which I have more affection for than it justifies.
Okay.
But I'll come to that later
okay,
on and see how the mood takes me.
And I haven't seen any new release DVDs. You'd think that would be an ideal thing to talk about on DVDs.
Yeah, true.
I've actually seen two sort of, I suppose you'd call them secondary films from very good directors.
Okay.
Which were Absolute Power.
Ah, of course.
Clint Eastwood film from 1998. And Millions by Danny Boyle. The other film by Danny Boyle with Million in the title.
Yes.
Which actually does briefly feature Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Right.
And is quite upbeat.
It was kind of his LA takedown before Heat.
In a way.
To a degree.
Except it's not a remake, but
it's kind of a warm up. Yes,
it's out
it
there.
It exists.
Yeah, and it's worth a look as well. But firstly, we'll look at some of your emails, I think, shall we?
Yes, the famed admin.
Oh, admin. Oh, yes. I've missed the admin.
Really?
Yeah.
You're planning a wedding. Surely you have more than enough admin to be going on.
I'm just addicted to admin right
Fair
now.
Enough.
An admin addict. So, first of all, via Twitter, because we're on the Twitter, you can Twitter us up or tweet us up or follow us, whatever they call it.
Twit.
And we're Movie Banter, so do search for us. And then we'll post our little movie reviews throughout the week as well. So
and occasional other thoughts.
And just general thoughts as well. So you can friend us up or follow us or
I think follow us.
Follow us.
Or tweet to us.
Yeah.
I don't know if you tweet something or if you tweet to
exactly.
someone.
You can give us a good twatting on that website.
Oh, dear.
This was from Super Toys. Good name. He said, would love to hear the multiple takes of the opening, hello! I was hoping John would join in.
Sorry,
he failed to.
Sorry. Well, this is an outtake. Yeah.
Well, should we do it again then?
Okay,
we'll keep this one in.
Yeah.
Just for Super Toys. Would love to hear the multiple takes of the opening,
hello!
When it doesn't go quite right. Dig the podcast. Great job, guys. Thank you, Super Toys.
Thank you very much.
There's more praise for the hellos, actually, this week than I thought there would be.
Yeah.
This is all since James Carey, our long-time listener and even longer-time friend, kicked it all off by saying, doesn't like the hellos. Don't like him.
Well,
he thinks it sounds more like kids' TV, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe that's our audience.
If this has made him stop listening, then goodbye to James Carey.
The trouble is, in terms of multiple takes, we're very rarely out of sync. It's more before the hello, we normally get a bit of muttering and pointless wittering that then we have to cut out because it's either inappropriate or just rubbish.
It's actually normally us wittering about films that we're going to talk about.
Yes.
And then thinking, we should save this for the podcast,
exactly.
Really.
Keep it fresh.
Have conversation. Speaking of goodbye, this is an email from James this week, who said that he actually thought that we could maybe do some sort of similar hello to the goodbye element of the show and sign off with a goodbye. So we might do that. We'll see if the mood takes us, James. Thank you for that. Also, talking about Watchmen, saying that he hasn't decided if he wants to see Watchmen yet or not, but he said, since you two seem to enjoy it... Now I didn't even heard it right. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? And you didn't like the
trailer? I didn't enjoy it, having even not seen it. Maybe he means you two, as in you and Jen,
I think he probably does mean that.
In which case, am I now sidelined as part of this podcast? Yeah. Is this you now, and Jen's podcast?
Yeah, it's now the Movie Banter podcast with John and Jen, with Paul sometimes, even though you're always here, and Jenny frequently isn't.
John and Jen's got a good ring to it, hasn't it?
It does. It's like the double J.
The Movie Podcast with John. I can't even say it.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's an outtake there. We'll keep it in just for super joys.
I'm sure he's talking about me and Jen enjoying watching.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He wonders how it compares to other graphic novel adaptations, such as Road to Perdition, etc. And off the top of my head, I haven't read Road to Perdition, or have I?
I didn't know that was a graphic novel.
It was.
Yeah.
As was From Hell Sin City. From Hell was another Alan Moore one, which he took his name off.
That's right,
I did know that.
I did know that, yeah.
I think it comes up fairly, largely because, from memory of Road to Perdition and From Hell and Sin City and 300, it's very, very true to the book. Mm. I know this is an argument you made either on the podcast or off air about saying that sometimes in order to adapt a book into a film, you have to change the book. And while I can see that is an argument, I think for comic books it's less of a factor because the visuals are already there as well. It's far more of a complete thing.
True.
And while sometimes they need changing, not always. And I think Watchmen is very true to the book, but I think that works in its favour. And I think I prefer it, I think, to most other adaptations. Maybe not. Well, it's probably about on a par with Sin City, I'd say.
Is it fair to say that with graphic novels and the authors behind those, that obviously there's a novel and then gets adapted to the big screen, then the director or different people involved, the producer maybe, sort of storyboard it, get the idea of the visuals they want it to look like. With a graphic novel, of course, that's basically like a novel that's been storyboarded for film,
yes,
for the big screen. So actually the director can't really change a huge amount then, because actually, of course, it's all been pretty much each frame looks like a storyboard would be if they're going to
film it. Yes, it depends on if they're going to change the story around much or not. Because, I mean, one idea floated for Watchmen years ago, which never got made, and everyone's quite happy about this, is that to bring it up into the 21st century, set it 2006 with the Iraq War going on and modern-day here.
Right.
And so that would be changing a lot and taking the very rough concepts of it, but then making a new thing around it.
Mm.
Which is one argument someone has put forward as being spread around quite a lot online, of someone essentially selling all the fans, I mean, which aren't that many, but all the fans who are railing against Watchmen saying, no, it's rubbish, it's not the book, to essentially shut up, because it's about as good as it could be. And if you wanted a Watchmen film at all, I mean, lots of people don't want a Watchmen film, which is fair enough, but for those people who wanted a Watchmen film, this is as good as you are ever going to get.
Yes, yeah.
And like it or like it less, it's someone who really cared and knew what they were talking about and put the effort in.
Yeah.
Whereas you could have had someone who said, right, let's take that and then make everything different.
It could have been McGee. Always
pretty much
think of that.
Yes. Mind you say that, Terminator Salvation is looking quite good.
On the Watchmen note, email from Jed here, who says that he's heard very, very mixed reviews of the film and that he's not actually allowed to see it yet as he's 16.
No.
Is it, what rating is it?
Well, it's R in America and 18 here.
Is it 18 here?
Yeah,
is that right?
It is. Well, there's some sex, some nudity tied in with the sex, and a moderate amount of violence.
Well, this is what he asks. He says, does violence, this violence, sex, nudity take away from the intellectualism of the film? As I haven't seen it, I don't know. But he says he's no prude, but thinks it might have marred the integrity of the movie. Over to you, John.
I don't think so, really. The sex and nudity, there's only sort of one scene which has a bit of nudity, and it doesn't really affect much. I think it's in the book. They may have relocated it slightly.
Is it Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
No.
Oh, good.
It's Malin Ackerman.
Right.
Wonderfully. But so no, that's just sort of in context. The violence, it's a weird one because it's more violent than the comic book is. I mean, there's far more, it's far more like 300, I think. It's probably thrown in for the fans of 300, or else just they wanted to really make sure they got an R rating.
Yes.
And so they sort of put that in. So you get a bit more bloodshed and bones breaking on occasion. But which is, I mean, it's very slightly jarring if you've read the book, because you think that's a bit unnecessary.
Mm.
At the same time, it's all, again, in context. It kind of fits. You're thinking it's a vicious fight between big people who fight each other.
Yeah.
There would be that.
So, of course,
kind of
you expect that, don't you, if you expect the book. Yeah.
So, no, I don't think so. And I think that the mixed reviews thing, it's had a massive drop-off. I think second weekend, it dropped about 70%, something like that, which is huge. And that annoys me. But I'd like to think it signifies that it will do well in due course. Because I think that people who know the book have gone to see it, have all went to see it the first weekend, that was it. And people who don't know the book, I think people like you, who have thought, oh, that doesn't look for me, I'm not particularly sold, will give it a chance when it comes out on DVD, and then people will warm to it.
Maybe.
I think at the moment it's a bit of a polarised thing.
Yes, yeah.
Some people have just either come out of it hating it, because it wasn't what they thought it was going to be, or else think it's not for me.
I think particularly while the reviews are so mixed, people are there at the minute thinking, oh, my hard-earned, credit-crunched pound,
yes.
Do I spend it on this or not? Because this reviewer says I should, this reviewer says I shouldn't.
Yeah, I've not heard of it.
I can't decide. Sure. I'll go and see Marley and Me instead.
Yes.
So yes.
Yeah, but I'd like to think it'll be... I can't think of an equal film, but there are lots over time. Austin Powers relates to it in no real way, but didn't do that well at the cinema, but then built a huge following on video at the time.
Yes.
And just people warmed to it, and word of mouth spread in the right way, rather than people just coming out and saying, oh, I didn't understand that, it's rubbish. It's like, well, no, that's not what it's about.
Oh, video.
Yes.
Jed goes on in his email to again, talking about our hello again, saying...
No.
In fact, I love the fact he actually writes in the email saying, a big Movie Banter style hello to John
Paul and Jennifer. With a capital H as well.
Bless you, Jed, for playing our game. Thank you very much indeed. He does say, first off, that he really enjoys Jennifer's presence on the podcast. Sort of expands the range beyond the usual lads podcast. Well, yes, we like to think so as well.
Yes.
Not all the time.
Except for this week.
She's not here.
We've locked her in a box.
Now, he does say, I'll admit I've developed a little crush on Jennifer. Just listening to her. That's rather odd. So, she has a fan. That's nice to know.
Exactly. Nice to know that she has a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
So one person he's only done about three.
Any ladies out there want to fan us up?
No, please don't.
Or gents, not fussy, really.
It's your tone of voice, but the swaying you're doing. Why are you saying that? That's your flirty hip move.
And a bit of sway. Yeah, ladies love the Carenza sway.
Yeah, but I'm the only person who can see it, and I don't love the Carenza sway. So
that's why we need some fans out there.
Yes.
So we'll pass on your fandom to Jennifer. So thank you, Jed. Bless you. It's nice. And he's told us he's 16 as well. And it's nice to know that, you know, Jennifer's... She's the older woman.
She
let's
is.
Just say that much.
She's 46.
I won't reveal her age, but yeah, you have. So,
no, she's not. She's not 46.
No,
she's 44.
Yeah, at least.
Something like that. He also, as for my favourite lads films... I think a lot of buddy movies and buddy cop movies fall into the category of lad films, which is a fair point, I think.
This was our Desert Island Flicks last week.
Yes.
Indeed, yes.
He said he enjoyed Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Nights. Jackie Chan, Owen Wilson, The Wild West and Victorian London. What's not to like? That's a fair point. I remember actually enjoying Shanghai Nights, I think more than Shanghai Noon, but I can't remember why. But I haven't seen either of them for a while.
No, but I anything with that sort of Jackie Chan having that free rein to muck around with props,
yes,
you know, always entertaining.
They're a decent example of Jackie Chan's American work, at the risk of sounding pretentious, because it's not as good as his proper Hong Kong stuff. But it's not nowhere near as bad as The Medallion or The Jacket.
No, exactly, that sort of
level. He'll also assume such lowbrow fare as Hey Dude, Where's My Car? There's no hey in that, it's just Dude, Where's My Car? The American Pie movies and the Harold and Kumar films also count as land movies, which is a fair point. American Pie 2, I think, is the best. That did well. Because I think it had decent characters rather than just gross-out stuff. Dude, Where's My Car? I weirdly have a degree of affection for... I can't quite work out why.
I think you made me watch that once, and I didn't quite enjoy it as much as everyone else
no,
there did.
No, I think because it's got at least one quotable line which keeps reoccurring to me, which is when they're ordering Chinese food.
Oh, yes.
And then the lady at on the other end of the microphone just keeps going, and then... and that's it. And then...
Yeah.
And so it's sort of embedded into my head slightly. Mm. And it's not a particularly great film, but I think it's likeable as well.
Yeah.
I think the people, they
so,
do a good
so.
Job with what they've got
I, to I'd
with.
Prefer Dude, Where's My Car to Harold and Kumar films any day of the week, I think, really.
Yeah, I've seen the first one, and it didn't do much for
no,
me.
No. Yes, we'll be setting Desert Island Flicks shortly. Jed gives another suggestion, which will be Storing Away. So thank you, Jed. If you have any other suggestions, any listeners out there for our Desert Island Flicks, when we pick a category of style of film and you know, deliver our creme de la creme versions of, then do let us know, and we shall store them away and use them in a future week. In the meantime, actually, it's probably worth setting the one for this week. Thinking about it now while we use on it for later.
Were you happy with the one I came up with?
I was happy with that, yeah.
Fair enough.
Hit me.
Boom. Well, this week, I thought, because on Saturday, we went on Paul's stag do, or bachelor party.
Stoke. Sounds like my brother now. So yeah. He did spend most of the day just going, stoke.
I was slightly scared by your brother's level of filth.
Yes.
He's meant to be your little brother.
I know. He's
meant to be
all
sweet
grown
and
up.
Innocent.
He's all grown up now.
He is. I was thinking, because in that context, and I will have to write a speech for Paul's wedding,
indeed,
which is slightly disconcerting. Given that you're a stand-up comedian, and I am not.
Yeah, well, this is you could try out here the week before.
That could work.
We can have a Movie Banter John's Best Man Speech special.
Yeah, I'll just reel it off. Yeah, that'll feel... Yeah, 45 minutes, that's about right.
Yeah,
is that wrong?
I think so. Talk about films halfway through. Yeah.
Get you involved.
Review a couple of movies. Yeah. I think that's the way that...
Read out an email and talk about having a crush on Jen.
Exactly.
That'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly,
that's entirely standard.
Yeah.
So I thought...
So the happy couple.
So I thought that Desert Island Flicks could be the best man speech from weddings.
Ah, indeed. In films.
In films, yes. Of course. Sorry, not from just weddings we've been to.
Just, Dave and Laura, remember that?
Oh, that was great. Yes, and I can only think of a couple, actually, but there are a couple of quite good ones.
We can pick them out.
So, yes, we'll pick that apart later on.
We'll come back later, yes, okay.
On to reviews.
I've seen one film this week, which is actually, I think, not officially out till tomorrow.
Ooh.
Or today, or yesterday, depends on when you hear this podcast.
Fair enough.
But it was a preview thingy, and it's Paul Blart, Mall Cop. Sounds horribly American.
Yes.
And in many ways it is.
See, from what I've heard of this film, it did far better than anyone could imagine.
Yeah, well, it topped the box office for a good few weeks in America. It did very well.
But... look on the IMDb, it has about 5.5, which implies it's average.
Well, I don't know. I started off hating it, and then I ended up in the middle. I really liked it, and then I ended going, oh, it was okay.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a roller coaster of emotions for me in that sense. Right. Even though it's Kevin James, who was he's apparently very big in comedy.
He was in Hitch.
Yes, he was also in Chuck and... I now pronounce you...
Oh, Chuck Larry.
Chuck and Larry, that's
yes,
right.
Which I haven't
Adam
seen.
Sandler. He's good mates with Adam Sandler. He's in loads of his films, and Adam Sandler produced this film as well. And he's also in... he's the main guy from King of Queens, I think it is.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So he's got, you know, form in America, certainly. Over here, not really. He's sort of Adam Sandler in a fat suit, really.
Yeah.
there is a lot... you know, it's one of these sort of comedies, in inverted commas, which could often do with more laughs. Although, actually... I did find, although the script I found to be particularly weak,
right,
and it sort of frustrated me, thinking I just wish they would spend longer writing these things.
Put some jokes in, yeah.
There were just scenes where they just went for a really lazy option, and often not even a joke. They just have a character blurting out some crucial plot point to get to the next scene, in a way that they would never, ever actually do it, and it just... painful, really. If you sort of, you can notice the joins a bit too much, and of course the skid is to try and make it all quite seamless and make it all seem logical. So that was a bit frustrating. But to be fair, I don't know what key part of it made it work. I think it must have been the direction or just Kevin James himself. But there's some physical stuff in it which is very funny.
Okay.
I'm not normally a big fan of the pratfall.
Yes.
But there's some, you know, there's a lot.
If it's done well.
Yeah. There's a lot of fat guy comedy in it. Some of which is a bit too much. And you think, okay, I get the idea. He's fat and he just ran into a wall again because he looked. You know, there's one point. He's looking at a pretty girl walking along in slow motion, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to walk into something, and he does, and he falls over hilariously.
But that's been done forever.
That sort of thing, a tad predictable. And another physical moment, though, for example, which I hadn't seen done before, which made me laugh out loud, which is rare, is it's him trying to sort of foil a bank robbery of sorts, and he's doing that sort of crouchy down, runny thing because he's a fat guy. It's even funnier than usual. But then he gets to the queue thing with all of the, you know, they queue up sort of thing. But, you know, which is empty, of course, it's an empty bank. And yet he still crawls and crouches through the entire queue, even though we could just go under it. And so that's quite funny. That was quite nice. So there's things like that, which are amusing. A couple of slightly frustrating things. Firstly, of all, is the overwhelming Americanism behind it. The fact it's a mall cop, and the fact that there's a few cultural references that Brits just don't get because they do this. And it's only frustrating in that, you know, I quite understand it's made for America by Americans.
Yeah.
But I sometimes I just think they should have half an eye on this world market that they're going to then sell it to. And maybe just put in a few references. There's a few references. They could have picked something that more the international that we might have got, or at least a familiar American export that we have as well, rather than just...
Because I know for things like, slightly weird example, but the Shrek films, or at least one or two of them, they have famous Americans doing voiceovers for some minor characters.
Oh, yes.
And then they use famous Brits.
Yeah, we had Jonathan Ross and Meredith Frostrup.
And then it's probably similar worldwide, maybe to a degree. And so you would have thought they could just do, when shooting, put in a couple of little bits here and there that wouldn't take that much effort and yet just make international audiences feel a bit more at home with the context.
Yeah. My other frustration is that it's a Christmas film.
Oh, really?
And we're getting it now.
Right.
Because, you know, obviously sometimes they give it a 2-month wait before we bring it over here. And, yeah, fair enough, but it's a Christmas film. You know, they could have either waited until next Christmas, which, of course, they wouldn't do because they want the money back by then, or have released it last Christmas. But it just seems a little bit off to just give it to us a couple of months later and expect us all to go and see it.
Hey, sunny weather. Everyone's in the mood for a Christmas film.
So that was a little bit odd as well. What I hadn't expected, though, is that actually, you know, it's almost a two-part film in a way. It starts off with this guy, Paul Blart, played by Kevin James, who is this guy, you know, overweight guy who can't get into the sort of the police force. He wants to be a proper policeman, but a state trooper, but he you know, he keeps on fading, largely because he's got hypoglycemia and just keeps on falling asleep if he hasn't got enough sugar. So he gets this job as a mall cop, takes it all very seriously as a real policeman, which actually I slightly found frustrating as well, only for me personally, because I had a similar idea, which I pitched to Radio 4 as a sitcom a while ago, and they went, nah. Although my version was a bit less developed, probably. Mine was about a store detective who thinks he's a real detective, like a film noir-style thing.
Nice.
And a little bit less depth, probably, than you know, it didn't have the family background. The nice thing about this film is it's quite an affecting portrait of this guy who is alone. He's got a daughter. He lives with his mum as well. And there's the three of them who sort of get by, but his mum and his daughter really want to set him up with someone. Mm. And you can tell he's lonely and, you know, yada yada. So there's that side of things that are dealt with as well. What I could have done without is the first 20 minutes, half an hour, of showing us what a bumbling loser he is,
right.
How he's picked on by his work colleagues, how he asks a girl out and she rejects him, or then he falls over and he's made a fool of by some local kids.
Yeah.
I got the idea in the first minute that this was a loser.
You don't need to labour the point.
Yeah, it was quite sort of painful and not that funny, but sort of almost Ricky Gervais in The Office style comedy of embarrassment moments for the first half hour. And I thought, if this is the entire film and there's a redemption at the end, then no thank you.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it took a twist that I didn't really know about, which I probably, if you've seen the trailer, you do, which it sort of becomes Die Hard with a pratfall, and it's lots of him creeping through, you know, air ducts and vents and that sort of thing to try and...
Presumably,
and
course, quite wide air ducts.
Well, exactly, rather large, which, of course, hilariously fall and collapse on the thieves.
Of course.
But, and you know, we all know what's going to happen. He is, of course, going to save the day because it's that sort of film. And because it's that sort of film, that's the only other frustration I had, is that it's clearly family aimed.
Yeah.
And the slight problem is that you've got all these bank robbers, these thieves, who use explosives to scare away the police force, and they say, hey, if the police try and get in, it'll blow up and it'll kill all of them. So they clearly don't mind killing people.
Yeah.
And yet they've got hostages who they never threaten once. You hardly ever see a gun because it's aimed at families. And they're trying to get Kevin James, get the Paul Blart, this mall cop, out of the woodwork and say, come on out, you know, we're going to find you. And they keep on sending more guys after him, who he in turn, you know, gets rid of. And not once do they say, look, come out, or we'll shoot a hostage.
Yes.
That's the obvious, you know, a 15 or 18 rated film would have done that.
Yeah. You can't really make a family-friendly hostage terrorist film.
Exactly.
You end up being a bit hampered.
It just means that they just ignore the hostages throughout the entire film, which I'm not saying they should shoot a hostage. I'm not really that bloodthirsty a cinema-goer.
No, but it becomes kind of an elephant in the room.
A breakdown in logic, yeah. Exactly. So there was a little bit of that going on. The only other nice things I would say about it, actually, is that it had really creative use of like free running, is that what they call it? Free jumping?
Parkour,
kind of, yeah. In that all the bad guys seem to be perfectly trained in this.
Oh, okay.
And of course, a shopping mall is a perfect...
Yes.
It's a playground for that, really. And so they've all got skateboards, and Paul Blart, the mall cop, has got this Segway that he uses to get around. So it makes for some quite amusing... Oh, and we mentioned earlier Jackie Chan and his use of props and things. And there's an element of that in there, of, you know, skateboarding down escalators while he's using his Segway in the lift, and they jump off the Santa's Grotto into the glass elevator.
Yeah, okay.
Things like that. So it's quite interestingly done, and looks like it was quite a fun day to shoot. So, I actually ended up enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Right.
But the first third, I would just say, expect a comedy of embarrassment.
Yeah, okay.
Get through that, and you'll find some quite nice jokes. Particularly, actually, there's his boss... I found was quite amusing in that at the end his boss is on the outside. This is sort of the head of all the mall cops, and he's saying to the chief SWAT guy, here's some I'm trying to help out a little bit here, and he's actually talking to we've got the mall cop talking to the head of police, who's now been put away with by the head of the SWAT team. So the head of police is a bit, his nose out of joint because of the SWAT team.
Yeah.
So our mall cop man goes, I don't know what to do to help. I've given you a little list of some put downs here. So why don't you just try these out on the head of SWAT and, you know, put him in his place a little bit. And so whenever anyone does that typical film style, you know, hey, newsflash for you, flight's cancelled. The other guy goes, oh, good one, writes it all down. So it's quite a nice way of putting in those sort of fun Arnie, John McClane style put downs. While actually referencing it a little bit more. So, you know, there's some funny stuff done with that. So I'd recommend it, really.
Okay. So it seems like it's sort of worth a watch, but slightly qualified.
I wouldn't go out of your way to see it, but I'd say you'll have a good hour and a half.
Yeah, you could do worse.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it, cinematically, I think.
It is,
it's weak. We've been busy. We've been off doing stag do's.
We've got stuff to do. There's also, it's not... I think, actually, you look at most of the cinema listings at the minute, and, yeah, they've got these things like The International out, and Duplicity's out very soon, things like that, Marley and Me. But, generally, most of the cinemas still have on release the big Oscar winners.
Yes.
So, you look down a cinema listing and think, well, what would I recommend to most people to go and see from that? And go, well, Slumdog Millionaire, Benjamin Button, those sort of things, really. They're still out. So if you haven't seen them already, I'd go and see those, really, to be honest.
Yeah. Or Watchmen. Watchmen's still
or
out.
Watchmen. Or Gran Torino, again, I'd say.
Yeah, actually, yeah, Gran Torino. I checked cinema listing today, and in our local cinema, anyway, Gran Torino still has loads of showings on, which I still haven't seen.
Worth a look.
So I should try and recruit someone for that. Or just get into the habit of going to the cinema by myself, which I've yet to ever
do. Have you never done that?
Never done it. I know. And well, this is something you can email in, actually, if you have done that yourself, if you don't care about it, if you would judge someone sitting alone in the cinema. Because I know you do often, because you're traveling the country on gigs. And I'm not traveling the country on gigs, but I'm often free in the middle of the day, but sort of can work whenever I want to. So if there's a film I want to go and see, can't find anyone I know to go and see it with, I should just go and see it in the middle of the day. But exactly. I don't,
treat
and
yourself.
I don't know why.
Have a little venture. Why not?
I know. I think especially also, there should be no stigma involved sort of going in the daytime, because it's fairly clear, if you wander in, anyone judging you, as I feel everyone would be, is just going to be looking at you thinking, you're clearly just bored in the middle of the day. Why
and
not?
If
it's like Friday night, 8 o'clock, and you're there, one, please. Really?
Yeah.
But again, it's justifiable in your case, because you're out of your area.
If I've got a late gig or something on a Friday or Saturday night, you know, I can see a late movie on a weekend night. And no, it's all
I know,
right,
but
really.
I just feel bad going to the Odeon, sort of surrounded by happy people with friends, and just saying, one, please. But then I never would on an evening, because I have friends to go
and see. In a way, the nice thing about it is I'm there thinking, I'm here because I want to see this film. You look around, see the couples and the groups of people, and normally there's about only one of those two people actually wants to see the film. And you see the other half, they're just dragged there. And then the amount of people who, particularly Friday and Saturday night films, the amount of people who come in and see a film and watch a third of it and then just leave.
Really?
Just
very,
because
very
they just go, nah, not for me. Really. And it's sort of, you think you've spent £8 on this each, really.
And also,
really, is it just not worth sticking out for a little while?
And if nothing else, could you not bear to spend the 3 minutes of research it would take to, you know, looking online or in papers to see if you're going to like this film or not?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are going to say, oh, I'm going to go Die Hard, this sounds like a fun family romantic film. Oh, it's not, I'm going to leave. Why not just look at the reviews?
I'm amazed the amount of people who just decide in the queue and just think, I haven't heard of any of these films. Yeah. I'll go and see that film.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's bizarre. At least look at the poster. If it's got explosions, it's probably not a rom-com.
Yeah. I was in on a train the other day, and there's a couple of rather posh women who are sort of probably a bit 50s or something. And you could tell they were uber tanned and kept talking about going to Milan and Naples, and then spring in Dubai, and then America for the season, sort of thing. And
where do these people live?
I don't know what the husbands did, but that was something that enabled the wives to have all day free to do whatever they wanted, and also to see whatever they wanted at the cinema, having done no research into it whatsoever. Because they were there saying, oh, what should we do this afternoon? Oh, we're going to go and see a film, aren't we? Oh, that's right, I made a note of what's on, let's have a little look. And I thought, this will be fun, because they clearly had no idea. And she, bless her, she'd written it all shorthand, so she's going, oh, well, there's that film, that film writing, that's going to be good, isn't it? And I was going, what film's that? Writing?
Is she looking and seeing that there is writing on the bit of paper? And
she said, I think it was writing. I heard about it.
The
it
Reader?
So, yeah, exactly.
Oh,
so,
right.
Oh, no, Reading. That's right. It's called Reading. And it's with that one from Titanic. Who is it again? Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow.
I couldn't have stayed quiet.
I know. I was there, and I think a few others around also were chuckling to ourselves, because they clearly thought it was romantic comedy at that stage.
Oh, dear.
And
they're in for a nasty shock.
Really not. Really not.
Especially depending on how prim and proper they are. If they go along thinking nice little PG thing, and then they get a lot of nakedness and sex.
Exactly,
So, I wish I could have seen them watch it.
I can't remember what else they had now. I think they called it Swamp Dog as well, which is quite amusing.
Right. I know my parents do this, to a degree. But they tend to decide... They tend not to go and see random films that they've not heard of, but they tend to occasionally, a film, they'll see stuff for. And think, that looks quite good. But coming back to the dragging things, I don't think there are very few films they both want to go and see. It's always, they pretty much take it in turns. My dad says, oh, I want to see the latest Bourne film. So my mum goes, all right, then we'll go and see it. And then there'll be a rom-com out. And they go, right, I ought to go and see that. And I go, all right, then I'll take you to go and see it. Yes.
You owe me one Bourne.
Exactly.
So instead, well, let's tell you about some of the DVDs we've seen this week instead. Would you like to kick
us off? Well, I'll crack it. Well, not DVD, but this was on TV last night, actually.
Oh, yeah. Peacemaker.
Yes, and I was flicking around and suddenly thought, oh, but I've not seen this in a while. And so I remember it being quite maligned, and I can't remember why. It may just be that I remember my current flatmate, when he was at university, he hated it, or he had friends who really hated it. So I think I permanently have a memory of someone really hating The Peacemaker.
Is it Nicole Kidman?
Yes.
Ah, yeah, it was me.
Future. Oh, well, you hated it as well?
I think it was.
Well, I know Gav did as well.
I know that. I do remember getting it for my birthday on video from my brother. But it, from this dodgy video shop we used to have down the road,
yes.
Where they just sell you the video cassette secondhand with no packaging,
yeah.
not even a case,
just an X rental, or nicked,
and it probably doesn't even work anyway. And you get about one in five didn't work.
Yeah.
But they're at £3 each. And that one is wrapped up by my... And again, no casing.
Oh, just a video.
Just a video.
Nice. And
thanks,
brother. Oh, you're loving, brother.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for
that. Is that why you hated it?
Clearly. I think probably...
Because of the wrapping.
Well, partly because it was just the wrapping, but partly also because I thought this... He doesn't really know me at all, does he?
Well, yes.
If he thinks that I'm going to like this film. So I actually sat there wanting to hate it, I think, in that sense.
It's weird. It's the basic premise is that a Russian terrorist group, or a Russian sort of rebellious commander... They set up a train crash. A train is carrying nuclear warheads. They crash the train, set off one of the nuclear warheads, steal the rest. So people will just think, oh, it was an accident. They've all been destroyed. Or at least to cover their tracks for a bit in the confusion. And then George Clooney, Nicole Kidman... I think it may just be they don't trust the Russians to do it.
Right.
So the Americans get stuck in, as is their wont. And George Clooney has contacts and they try and work out where these have gone, who might have them. Tracing them eventually to New York, where they capture all the rest of the warheads, but one has been smuggled out. And reduced in size into a backpack, which I think is probably not quite workable, and smuggled into New York, where they're going to blow up the UN. And there's a degree of politics into it all, and thought behind it, and some decent set pieces. But and it's got one of the better car chases I remember in recent cinema history.
Okay.
And George Clooney's good. So, I mean, there is a lot to like in it, but it still doesn't quite all hold together.
Yeah,
and I can't quite put my finger on why. I think it's all a little bit too forced.
Right.
But George, I mean, Nicole Kidman sort of does the job. It was before she was Oscar level.
Yeah.
It's when she was kind of, I can't think what else she did around that time. I mean, To Die For was only 95.
Okay.
And this was 97.
Right.
So this was in her ascendance. Yeah. And I think it was probably, she was big enough to get a big blockbuster film, but not heavyweight enough, not viewed as heavyweight enough yet.
When was she in Dead Calm? Well, that was early then, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dead Calm would have been.
It's a good movie, that.
Dull, I'm guessing about
93, something like that.
93? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
That is a very good film. Yeah, so it's worth a watch. I enjoyed it. I think George Clooney's good as well. His charisma carries it through to a degree.
That must have been one of his first films as well, I suppose.
Yeah, very true, because then from Dusk Till Dawn...
for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, except, of course, for Revenge or Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which is his first film.
Nice.
But yeah, I think from Dusk Till Dawn was his first mainstream post-ER film, and that was 96. And this is probably his second one.
Must be around then, yeah.
But no, it's a perfectly functional film, and I enjoyed it, but yeah, it's not necessarily anyone's best work.
Yeah.
But there are good... bits in it to like.
Wasn't missed off the Oscar shortlist that year.
Not really.
Fair enough.
But always good to see a nuclear bomb in films. Because quite well, no, but quite.
Say always.
Always. Wouldn't always say, good. But... My Best Friend's Wedding. Improved right? A new. Actually, no, it's a bit, no, that's a bit harsh because I like it. What was the Wedding Planner?
Oh yeah.
Nuclear bomb in the middle of the Wedding Planner would have made it infinitely better.
At the start, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At the start, in the middle of one of the weddings, kills everyone. Problem solved. No, but just because lots of films seem to hinge on, oh, there's a bomb, we must stop the bomb, and they stop the bomb, and where's the interest?
True.
Whereas at least if you get someone, maybe with two bombs, and they set one off.
That's true.
And then suddenly the stakes are upped, and you're not quite sure what may go on.
I remember that was a big thing in a series of 24.
Yes.
When a bomb
went
off.
I think that was series... I think it was series 6. It was kind of... Oh, sorry, yes.
No, the one in the desert.
I think that may be series 2.
Yeah,
when they have the huge explosion in the desert.
By that point, you'd had at least a series of, you know, will he stop the terrorists? And of course he does.
Yeah.
And so it was quite a surprise in that, oh, they actually exploded a big nuclear bomb. Wow, that's quite nice. The same episode that my mum was watching it with us.
Yes.
Doing a crossword at the same time, as she did every week, and it ended. And she said, well, didn't think much of that. Nothing really happened this week, did it? There was a bomb, a nuclear bomb.
One of the main characters crashed a nuclear bomb into the desert.
But you're right, you didn't get 9 across.
So nothing happened. Except, of course, Series 6, where they also set a nuclear bomb.
That's very true.
That was a big opening. But we're moving on now to TV banter.
Different show.
Let's return. So that's my total film watching.
Yes, fair enough.
I've been bereft, I'm afraid.
Well, I thought I'd watch some Clint Eastwood movies, having enjoyed Gran Torino, and I enjoyed Changeling. So I thought, actually, I'm going to... And I sort of saw something in Gran Torino that I sort of realised he does in all of his films, which is that he tells a very sort of traditional story in a way, or you know, a story that by another director could be not as compelling, but tells it very interestingly, and also he keeps it quite pacey. It's not a film that, I think I've said to people, it doesn't dwell too much on the emotions from scene to scene. It keeps it moving on. Each scene has a plot moving along, sort of moment. It happened in Changeling, happened in Gran Torino, Million Dollar Baby as well, that sort of, and also that sucker punch at the end, where you don't quite know where it's going to go. And it just made me think that actually, as a storytelling director, I think he is probably one of the best. He may not have the visual flair that someone like a David Fincher or someone might have, but he just is a really good nuts and bolts storyteller. Mm. So I thought, well, there's a lot of films of his that I missed. I think I saw quite a few of the sort of the 70s things of, I think, you know, like Dirty Harry, Outlaw Josie Wales, that sort of thing. But I hadn't seen a lot of his 80s and 90s stuff. Actually, I think since the orangutan films.
Yes.
That was sort of silly Clint.
Right.
And then you've got singing Clint in whatever film that was.
Doesn't he sing at the end of this?
Well, he does, but that's not really, it's not really a musical. Okay, such. Yeah, it's not really part of it. But, you know, so Absolute Power was when I dragged out the vault. And there was an odd moment watching it when you realise that this is sort of older Clint. You know, it's now 11 years old, that film.
Yeah.
So it's him, you know, you can tell he's older and he's sort of retired, I think, in the film, or retiring. But there's a moment where he speaks a bit like he does in Gran Torino. But he walks along and you just notice he's a little bit more upright than in Gran Torino, because, as he would be, it's 11 years ago. And just a little bit more, he's got that sort of the slight physique of a younger man, even though he's... And it just made me think, if I'm watching all of Clint Eastwood's films in reverse order, it's like The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yes.
I did feel like I was watching this man get younger.
Yeah.
Because suddenly he's now walking a little bit more stolidly, and then the next film he'll be, you know, doing a bit more car chases or jumping over some bonnets. So I think I might try and do that. I might just try and watch all of his films in reverse.
Nice.
And see what happens. But no, I thought Absolute Power was an excellent film. It's the film where... Clint plays a cat burglar. I don't know why they call it that, because they never steal cats, do they? But they sneak in like cats.
I'm sure they probably have done once in a while.
Yeah. And he witnesses the President of the United States, played by Gene Hackman, having an affair with a woman.
Yeah.
Gets a bit rough, and she's about to... He slaps around a bit. It gets very rough. She nearly kills him, and so Secret Service step in and kill her instead.
Right.
And all of this witnessed by Clint, they've covered it up. They realise that Clint has seen all this, and so they spend the film trying to track down Clint and trying to stop him releasing this information and ruining the presidency. And again, very compelling film. There's little more to say than that. It's a very good story, excellently told. I'd say the ending was a little bit confused, if I'm honest.
Right.
But and it's a little bit hastily done. I'd like to see more dwelt on what happened there. But I thought it was a really good film. And also, odd, I think also on the 24 note, to see Dennis Haysbert.
Oh, yes.
Who played David Palmer, the president, as a baddie. He's sort of a bad Secret Service agent. And the woman who plays Sherry Palmer in 24.
Yes.
As a goodie.
Oh, right.
So they're both in the film, both on the wrong different sides.
No.
So that was
I'm guessing not married.
And not married.
Fair enough.
Not even in the same scene together. But they're there.
Yes.
Know, the seeds were there for that early stage. So that was interesting in seeing another secondary Clint Eastwood film. Other one I saw this week, which I really would recommend, is Millions by Danny Boyle.
Yes.
Which I'd heard some good things about, and quite good in that, you know, it's a sweet family film. It's not a Trainspotting Danny Boyle film. It's a family film, really, and very sweet. It's, you know, two kids who find, not millions, actually, I don't quite know what it's called, millions. They find about £200,000.
Right.
But it's the same week that the Euros are about to come in the country.
Okay.
So they've got 2 days to get rid of it. It's a bit like Brewster's Millions.
Yes.
But not quite, because it's them. It's actually much more of a personal and affecting film than any of those sort of films where, oh, I've got to spend all this money in a wacky way. It's actually about these two kids, one of whom is a bit younger, a bit more naive, but therefore also more innocent. And so he's just got all this money, telling everybody who needs it that he's got money, and saying, well, if you need money, well, I'll just give you some money. And he wants to give it to the poor. He wants to do really well with it. And then this other, his brother, who's slightly older and therefore a little bit more responsible, but he's just on the cusp of teen years, and saying, look, just, we can't tell anybody about this. This has got to be our secret.
Mm.
And really about what happens there. But it's a really nice film. And it's actually got a really a sweet sort of thing they do at the end, where they've been talking all the way through the film about giving money to the poor, and that's what this kid wants to do.
Mm.
And all about this kid wants to plant a well in Africa. That's what he sort of decides he was going to do with the money. And this sort of happens at the end. That ruins nothing, incidentally, of the film.
Right.
But you know, it's worth a look for that. And also, I read up on it that actually the cast and crew, rather than have T-shirts of the film, as they often do, is they all instead gave money and paid for a well to be
cool.
Put in this village in Africa. So they practice what they preached. And for that, I think it's a marvellous little film. So I recommend Millions, particularly if you enjoyed Slumdog Millionaire, or if you're thinking of going to see Slumdog, but not sure.
Use it as a warm-up.
Yeah, use it as a warm-up. Well worth a look.
That's all of our films wrapped up.
I think it is.
So on to Desert Island Flicks.
Indeed. So best man speeches.
Yes.
From
now,
films.
It's a toss-up, because there aren't huge numbers, but there are a couple that embedded into my head.
Yeah.
All of which will be compiled and then churned out again at your wedding.
Fair enough. Thank you, if you will.
No. I'm going to go for comedy value, and also because we sort of see, yeah, it's almost believable. I'm going to go with Steve Buscemi in The Wedding Singer.
Ah, okay.
Because it's quite wrong and embarrassing.
Right.
And it's just the
yeah,
put
don't do that one.
Well, it's the put upon younger brother, or maybe he may even be the older brother, who hasn't done as well as the groom who's getting married. And so he's just a bit drunk and says things slightly inappropriate. And he refers to picking up two prostitutes. Or no, I think he said two women. And he says something like, there may have been prostitutes, but I don't remember paying. And the bride looks a bit shocked.
Yeah.
And in the end, yeah, Adam Sandler just has to burst in and wrest the microphone away from him. And he goes, oh, the best man, ladies and gentlemen. Whereupon Steve Buscemi shouts out, the better man, clangs a cymbal and walks off. And
nice. That's a good
and
ending.
It is. It's a great ending. And yeah. It works for me on various levels. Yeah. Also, because it fits Steve Buscemi quite well, because he's hardly in the film.
Doesn't he say at some point, you'll be divorced in a year as well?
Yes, I think, as he walks off.
Yeah, that's a fine speech.
So that's my vote, The Wedding Singer. You know, I know you hate it as a film.
I did. It's probably worth another viewing.
I think you should do, because
I was clearly in a bad mood.
I'm not saying it's a brilliant film, but it's a fairly solid rom-com.
It's rare that I've come out of a film and actually hated everything from the lighting to the art direction.
You
to
must
the sound.
Have been in a very bad mood.
I hated every part
it's,
of it.
I know, it's a likeable
clearly
film.
Must add up to being something good, because I can't imagine. Must have achieved something if it offended me on that many levels.
Well, very true. But no, I quite like The Wedding Singer. And yeah, it's 80s. You love the 80s.
I do like the 80s.
But anyway, but film quality aside overall, but that speech has embedded itself into my brain.
I'm going to go... I don't like to repeat myself on Desert Island Flicks, but I think I went for this for best rom-com, which is Four Weddings and a Funeral. And that would be... I'm going to go with... I don't know. I'm toying between... I mean, I think the best man from that was Hugh Grant. I think he'd be an excellent best man because he was funny. But, you know, this is the second time I've been best man. I hope he did okay that time. The couple in question at least talking to me, if not to each other, etc. That sort of thing. He was that, you know, witty, but in a nice way, sort of best man. That was sort of a textbook thing. I think if you take any lessons from the film world, look there rather than Steve Buscemi probably for you.
oh dear.
although, actually, if I were to pick my favourite, I'd probably be more likely to go with James Fleet as Hugo in that film. He does the thing about some... I was delighted to hear he married this woman because all his other girlfriends were all such dogs, and it's a delight to see so many here today. That sort of thing.
Which is very funny by a tiny fraction of the audience.
I think wrong best man speeches are very, very funny. Yeah. I think my favourite is actually not from the film world, but worth a look. Rowan Atkinson's best man speech is very good, just in his stand-up from many years ago, so seek that one out. And also Jeff Tipps from The League of Gentlemen does an awfully wrong best man speech. Yeah. You can see that on YouTube,
which Paul played me earlier, and it is very... Imagine what I said about Steve Buscemi being the put-upon younger brother.
Yeah.
It's that, but times about 20. Mm. It's just the best friend who has seen his friend succeed on almost every level where he has failed, except on one vital aspect.
which we won't ruin.
Yeah, but just seeking it. It's on YouTube. Yeah. And it's just wrong.
I won the moms.
Anyway.
We actually spent a long evening years ago with some friends compiling a list of funny ways you could do a best man speech.
But more funny from an outside point of view.
I think so.
Rather than funny...
We never actually sort of wrote any of them, but they're all just, like, you know, the best man who thinks he's still in NAM.
Yeah.
Or the best man who is trying to cover up the fact he's had an affair with the bride's mother.
But the best man who can see what's going on at the back of the room while no one else can.
The best man who halfway through realises he's at the wrong wedding.
Yes.
You can imagine. Best man, always hilarious. Whatever you do, always hilarious.
Oh, dear.
No pressure.
No pressure, yeah.
No pressure or anything.
Thanks for that.
We'll let you know how John did in about
a
month's
month.
Time.
Yeah. That's true. Well, yeah, because in four episodes' time, it'll be the episode like 2 days before your wedding.
Youch.
That's, you know, I'm just firing that out just to make you feel uncomfortable.
That's going to be a fun one to try and convince my fiance. I can't plan the wedding right now. I've got to go and record a podcast.
Record it. I mean, if I'm helping out with something, we just record it while setting up.
But we may actually have to record it. I can bring a little dictaphone and record it in the car between racing to the reception venue to set things up. So it'll be a movie banter on the move. The movie banter roadshow.
Yes, we'll see how it goes.
Indeed.
There'll be something anyway. We've been amazingly consistent at one a week.
We have. So, it's been good.
Yes.
So thank you for tuning in this far.
Thank you very much.
Please do tune in for the next 19 episodes.
Not more than just 19.
Well, the next
190,000 episodes.
Absolutely.
Which time will be something like, exactly. I just don't know what that's about.
Do spread the word, because you know, we're only going to keep making them if you keep on listening. And
that's very true.
If numbers continue to rise, so make sure you tell your friends.
Yeah, so tell your friends. And all, go rate us on iTunes, review us on iTunes. I think you can now... I could be wrong, but you can now rate without reviewing, which I think is quite new.
Ooh.
So please rate us,
and
then we'll get a nice high average viewing, and then more and people
more
will listen.
Exactly.
And it'll be a good thing. I don't really know why it matters that more people listen, because it's not like we get paid for it or anything, but it's I think it's nice to know that we're all part of a community.
If I knew that only three people were listening,
that's true.
And they were all Jed, that would scare me.
That's true.
But no, it's nice to know people are out there and that we're doing it for just not for ourselves.
Yeah,
otherwise, this does become a bit like when you're eight and recording on a little Casio cassette.
Yeah.
Your own little radio show.
And then you play it to your friends.
Exactly.
Although I'm fairly sure that only one or two of our friends even listen to this.
Exactly.
But I think that means all the rest are people out there in the world who've chosen to listen to us.
Whoever you be, if you want to get in touch with the show, then it's...
podcast@moviemistakes.com,
and you can email us in with any ideas for Desert Island Flicks, or for features, or for ideas, or for film reviews, or your comments, or just tell us you're there.
Anybody there? No, we know people are there. We have ways of tracking numbers.
We're watching you.
Yeah, right now. Turn around now. Oh, we've moved.
We've gone.
Yeah. But thank you very much, and we will see you next week.
Until next time. Goodbye.
That almost worked.
Didn't it?
We may keep that. We'll see how it goes.